And that's
there you
here.
Go.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. It's 10 a.m. on June 23rd, 2020. This is the meeting of the Story County Board of Supervisors. We are originating by conference call today from our administration building. If you are on the phone, we would ask that you mute your phone if possible when you're not talking. That helps us with sound quality. And I'll call the meeting to order, and we are, as I said, we are, because of COVID-19, providing access via conference call. So would ask anybody who wants to join us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. I would entertain a motion for adoption of the agenda.
So moved. Second.
Hedden?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Agenda adopted. Do we have any updates on COVID-19 issues from staff? Hearing none, are there any updates from the Board of Supervisors?
Not then.
I will go on to public comment number one. This comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. I'll open the public comment period. Is there anybody in person here or on the phone who has a public comment? I'll wait a minute. Thursday.
And there is no one so far that has texted yet.
Okay, thank you. Hearing nobody, I'll close public comment section number one. And then we have an item here for discussion consideration of items brought before the board with requests for immediate action. Are there any of those from staff? Hearing none, we'll go on to agency reports, emergency management quarterly report, and we received a report from Keith Morgan. And Keith, I think I also heard you on the phone. Do you have anything to add to your report?
No, just that we are continuing to plan for future COVID-19 operations.
And we appreciate all the planning that you have been doing and all the assistance you've been to the community. Are there any questions from the supervisors?
Not at this time.
Not at this time for me either.
Okay, we'll go on then. Thank you, Keith. We appreciate it. And we appreciate Melissa's work as well if we tell her that. We'll go on to consideration of minutes. We don't have minutes at this point. Then we do have personnel actions listed. So we'll go on to consideration of personnel actions. I would entertain a motion.
I will so move that we approve them as they are presented.
Second.
Olson?
Aye.
Hedden?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Approved. And then we go to consideration of claims.
I move that we approve claims as presented.
I second.
Hedden?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Claims are adopted. Next, we have consent agenda. We have a very lengthy consent agenda, a lot of contracts for asset and other contracts. Is there anything that needs to be pulled from consent agenda?
No. Then I move that we approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
Olson?
Aye.
Hedden?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Consent agenda items are adopted. Going on to number 14, public hearing items. There are none. Number 15, additional items. The first one is discussion consideration of a hiring freeze exemption for secondary road equipment operators. And Lisa Wignall is here. And Darren Moon, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I don't know who wants to present.
I'll let Darren.
Alyssa says, Darren, you can go ahead and present this.
Okay. We had a position open up or become vacant in April of this year. We were trying to see how long we could get by without filling it with the unknowns of the road use tax and then the COVID restrictions we got right now for hiring freeze. Just recently learned of three employees that are going to be off for some medical issues in July and maybe into August, and we are a bit short on summer help this summer. We had a couple drop out at the last second, I think one due to COVID concerns and the other got another position somewhere else. So we're a bit shorthanded anyway. And so we'd like to request this old position get filled. If it gets approved, we could probably have them on board around August 1st. We'd like to get them trained in the snowplow before winter hits. And that's probably my biggest concern right now with having this position open. We kind of need to have a COVID plan going into winter. We need to be fully staffed for winter in case we do have some employees having to take COVID leave. We need the backup in place because there's not a lot of other options for us to find qualified operators that are trained on short notice. So we'd like to be fully staffed going into winter if at all possible.
Any questions, board?
I don't have it this time.
No questions, I'd entertain a motion.
I have a question. Okay. And Darren, I'd just like to follow to clarify. We received an email when you'd received the last payment, road use tax fund payment, and the way I read the email was talking about wanting to bring another employee on. So when I originally saw this request for the hiring freeze, I said, oh, he's saying somebody who's going to be replaced. So this is clearly to replace, and you're not going to be coming back to us to bring another employee on, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other questions? If not, is there a motion?
I move that we approve the exception for secondary roads for hiring the equipment operator.
I'll second.
Okay, any further discussion? Hearing none, Hedden?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Thank you, Darren.
Great, thank you.
Good, good planning. I agree with you about going into winter. Then there's the second one we have here is discussion consideration of hiring free exemption. Perception is for Animal Control Director Sandra King, and is going to present.
Good morning, board.
Good morning.
Good morning, Sandra.
No, I'm not. I'm like, we're going to have to move you. Oh, okay. Yeah. Let's just pull a chair up. Trying to keep
you. Okay. You can put it there and I'll move back.
We just want that to pick you up. You need a table? Huh? You need a table?
I'll move it.
No problem. Just a little bit of the audience.
I'm sorry.
Got it? I got it. Have it. There we go.
Okay, now that we've rearranged our room, we can get it put back together from the other studio.
Sorry about that. Okay, the request for you today is a request for hiring freeze exemption for the animal control director position. And as you know, Story County is a long time animal control director, Sue Jackson, is retiring in July. And after over two decades of dedicated leadership, she's moving on to a new chapter, and this presents a good opportunity to shape the future of the shelter. So I'm invited staff to provide some feedback on that. And we certainly obliged and share really good suggestions. And so the request is so that we can start recruiting to fill the position, having that position open long term, we're not able to. We want to be able to continue to provide great service that short term residents are comfortable with.
I have one question. You talked in your request about the number of staff and being short staffed. And then it's difficult, so we didn't fill this position. How many staff are there out there right now? 6 with Sue, and they staff the shelter not 24/7, obviously. But
they do not have the weekend on call.
Okay. Thank you.
So if I might add and expand on that a little bit, Sandra and I met yesterday and both brought a list of items to discuss, et cetera, related to moving forward, what past previous boards had discussed, et cetera. And one of the things that I suggested related to staffing was that possibly the staff, they do time study of some type, and I recommended she talk to Alyssa about that, et cetera. That a couple of years ago, I believe it was 2, it might have been 3, there was a time study done for the director herself and the duties. And as a result of that, they only had 5 staff at the time. And as a result of that time study, that's when Debbie, when they created the admin position, assistant position and stuff. So I made that suggestion. Some of it's tied into some other suggestions that previous board had discussed with and about hours and night hour expanding the hours that they were open and maybe weekends, that type of stuff. So my suggestion list must have had about 20 or 20 so topics that have been discussed over the years, but related to the staffing there. And a reminder that the staffing, our shelter, like most shelters, are closed to the public most mornings. And the reason is it does require several staff to go in. If you're going to get all of those animal cages or kennels cleared out, the litter changed for everybody, spend a moment or a minute even with each animal just to, you know, do some affirmation and some social interaction, that pretty well eats up, you know, 2 or 3 individuals at least their morning, the time for their morning. So just like to add that.
Do you have any questions?
I guess my only question would be is if the board approves for you to post for the position and there's no one in place right away, is there kind of a transition or an interim? Have you thought of an interim plan until somebody is in place then?
I have. I really would like to recognize the hard work of the staff, although no one has come to me personally and expressed interest. I think there is some internal interest. However, you know, even that, of course, to do something internal with the park board approval to hire. And then I would want to go through a similar extensive, you know, recruitment process in terms of, you know, reviewing resumes and applications, yep, having to go through interviews with everybody in the whole
thing. Okay. Okay.
Do you have a timeline for hiring yet? Do you know what your goal would be to have somebody in place?
I have on here September 14th. I think that would be a good goal. I think, you know, if it takes a little longer than that or something in October, I don't think we're teaching that. I just wouldn't want to go too long without having somebody in place there because I think having some on-site direction would be helpful and having them know who to go to. Right now, there are probably a couple of people on staff who, you know, staff would normally sort of migrate wards, but I think having one person as the go-to.
So you're thinking of an interim director or not? From staff?
I was thinking that at first, and after a conversation with HR, I determined that we could just do it like it's been done in the past, and it's just been for internal head.
Okay, now what I meant is, well, Sue's last day is when?
July 24th.
So in between July 24th and September 14th, do you want to have somebody there who's in charge, or do you want to work with the staff? And maybe you kind of, and I'm just thinking if you've got internal people who might be interested, it's difficult sometimes appointing an interim director because then it looks like you're favoring somebody for the position.
You hit unbalanced there.
Yeah.
Because I think to select someone out of that group we still need to take that amount of time and look at the process of interviewing. I'm not opposed, certainly, to an interim director. It's just knowing who to choose and having to go through that same process so it doesn't look like you're doing that showing you favoritism.
So I think the really biggest thing here, quite frankly, is not the interim director. Sandra could pick up, you know, pick up the some of the administrative stuff. Can I finish my sentence, please?
Well, I have another question.
Okay, but I'd like to jump in. The problem we have is Sue is one of only two animal control officers. We're now left, as of July 24th, with only one animal control officer, and that's where I see the problem.
Sure, sure.
If we don't fill it until September. So that's my comment. Okay, go ahead, Liz. I just
No, what I was going to ask was if Sandra felt comfortable not having an interim director hire appointed there, but maybe staff coming to you if there were concerns that they needed to have a decision made the director would normally make?
For that short period of time, I think I would be comfortable.
Okay. Okay, and then going on to what Laura's saying, having only one animal control officer, you're saying the director serves as animal control officer as well.
Correct. That's the problem.
But if we're at June right now,
it's possible to get.
I know. There are some, Ethan may need to help. Sandra and I just discussed this yesterday, so I don't know that Sandra's had time to do research on it. But I recommended that she figure out what legally an animal control officer can do per Iowa code that a shelter attendant can't. I think that's the issue.
Okay.
That if we get in a situation where somebody's got to pull an animal right away, et cetera, I don't believe all of the staff can legally do that. So that was my recommendation to her.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah.
And Supervisor Olson certainly makes a really good point on that. But based on some suggestions coming from staff and review of job descriptions and discussion with HR, I think there's room to do both, to you know, have the animal control officer if necessary, and I will both dictate to do those higher level animal control duties, but also to bring staff in as you know, as much as possible and let them get some of that experience.
And I agree with the training there. I just want to be very clear, considering we're still haunted at times from a situation of almost 20 years ago.
Sure.
Okay, so that was my real point. You know, and certainly Sandra, we have resources available that Sandra, if she needs to make decisions, can consult with us. I'm sure Ron Edwards over in Ames, who is the animal control, the shelter director over there, would be helpful if you called him and said, hey, I don't quite know what to do with this situation either. So I feel comfortable with us not having an interim. I'm more comfortable about, the actual provision of control.
And that does bring up, you know, September 14th is your goal. I'm not sure what the normal hiring time frame would be. Is there a way to do it sooner, or if you feel uncomfortable with that?
Minimum of 2 months.
Minimum of 2 months.
I mean, that's pushing it. But for a director role, you know, you don't want to rush it. You don't want to rush it, unfortunately. You know.
No, I understand that. Certainly.
Yeah. So at least 2 months, and that gives us that time.
So, and we can post it before, correct?
Given that we posted today.
Yeah. Okay.
So, there's nothing that says you have to wait until the date.
Right.
The person
retires.
No, start the process. A lot of places post before so they can have it filled, and there's not that gap, and there's no interim needed.
And especially since we want to reach out to make sure we've got an applicant pool that is external also.
Right.
Ron actually came from Los Angeles. For Ames. Now I don't, and that was another suggestion I made is, kind of check that out. I'd like to then just make one comment about my concern in the job description as it exists that's being considered now is the statement of a bachelor's degree. I know we always say degree or equivalent experience, but I would like to ask HR and Sandra to take a look at that, maybe look at an AA or somebody who graduates.
It'll change the complexity of the job and the scoring of where it falls amongst our comp schedule. They don't have to have a bachelor's degree to hire them. It's just they have to have experience to waive that. So they can have an AA and other experience.
And but what do you mean as far as they won't get paid as much?
The grading. Part of the component of it is the...
This position of any position we have is going to be so dependent upon this person's experience and knowledge related to animals.
Yep.
And so there are programs out there that offer AAs in veterinary med assistant tax, there, et cetera. And so what I'm hearing here is that we wouldn't be able to pay somebody who would be a great.
So all of our director positions have a bachelor's required in some of them.
Do you guys
want
to trade places?
I can. Sorry. You know, a lot of individuals get hung up on that education requirement. That is when we do this and when we did our comp study and everything like that, that would be, if somebody really didn't have the experience, that would be the minimum level of education they need. Now, if they have some experience, you could have somebody that has 20 years experience and no education, and the board can decide, or the board can decide to hire them because of their education, their best fit, or because of their experience.
Okay.
We put that to be or equivalent because you might have somebody that doesn't quite have that bachelor's, that has an AA and experience, or doesn't have a degree, and that gives the county the flexibility to hire somebody. It doesn't mean you can't hire them because they don't have a bachelor's. It is just looking at all the factors of what it would take to be a director in animal control. That would be the minimum, just the minimum education requirement.
So can we still pay somebody?
Yes, absolutely. If we take it out of the job description, it changes the whole scoring of that on our compensation.
It does say or equivalent in our job description.
Absolutely.
Then that was experience and make sure that's an in the job posting. I don't see where the issue would be.
My concern is that some people won't apply. They'll read that and they'll see that and say, oh crap, I don't have a shot here. And that's always my concern when we live.
From an HR perspective and looking at all the applications and everything we did over the last 9.5 years, I don't see that as an issue. We have people.
This is a position that most likely the people most that we might want to have it long term might be people who are out there running a private rescue and maybe don't have that background, but they have 20 years experience in running a private. I just want to make sure that we aren't turning people off.
Here's what it says in the job description. Bachelor's degree and considerable experience working in a related position. It says and.
Yeah, not or.
Or equivalent combination of education.
It doesn't say it in the
It is in there. It must not have put. So it's in there and we put it in all of our
books. Well, if that's it's what not. Linda accessed, what do you think
it's
other
not
people
on the,
want?
It's
it,
not
it,
on
must,
the,
it must not have put from the access.
No, it's not on the S drive. I'm on the S drive and I don't see it.
And that's the point
I
want to
say.
All of our job descriptions say that in the access database as well. I know 100%
it's
in the job description.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So why would we not have access? I mean, and I don't mean, I mean literally.
When you get a PDF, it's an error.
So then, but you
I'll
can
go
away.
I'll go in and correct it right now.
All right. Yeah. So we'll correct it and make sure that it's in.
They all say that. We have to go in, it's an access database. You have to flip that little checkbox that says add state or equivalent, it must have
gotten checked.
Yeah.
So, okay, so and that might be a good project for HR is also to go through and have somebody look, your intern or whatever, and make and see what's on the S drive for every one of these. So that's where I'm going to go. If a citizen calls up and asks me about a job, any job, I'm going to go to what's on the S drive. So I'm going to quote what HR has put on the S drive. So if HR
is
okay, thank
so
you.
we've clarified that we need to change that and clarify that it will be allowing for experience.
Okay, super.
So
thank you.
We did have that very discussion because I love to don't want to move somebody out who has that good experience but may not have a bachelor's degree. So we certainly were starting that conversation.
Thank you.
Other questions or discussion? If not, I'd entertain a motion. Thanks, Sandra.
I think it's my turn. So I move that we approve the hiring freeze exception for the animal control director.
Second.
Further discussion? Hearing none. Olson?
Aye.
Hedden?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
thank you for doing all the work you've already done on it.
And all the work you're going to do on it.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Sandra, you're still up with discussion and consideration of revisions to the asset policies and procedures.
Yes, I just have a couple of items to bring your attention to in the asset policies and procedures. This is the time during the year we bring it to you for you to take a look at, see if you want to change or add anything. This has gone through the asset admin team and the asset board. And what's being revised is a lot of cleanup, but I do want to draw your attention to just a couple of places, and that is pages 3 and 4. On page 3, the number of volunteers for each sponsor has been increased from 5 to 6, and that was due to the withdrawal of CICS July 1st.
And then, excuse me, if somebody isn't on mute, could you please mute your phone? Pardon the interruption.
And then on page 4, some termination language was added, and this was added to just spell out a little bit better the expectation for final withdrawal. And then the rest of it is a lot of cleanup in terms of terminology, language, formatting, and so forth, unless you have some specific questions about what to
do. I don't have any specific questions. I know that the asset team, there was conversation through the CICS board of wanting to maintain a CICS person as part of assets, and since that was withdrawn or not approved, certainly recognize the need to have cleanup so it's not referencing CICS in here as well. And I also I like the idea, well, recognizing that CICS is being pulled out, that allows for additional people to serve on the asset board. It gives more of that community input on where those dollars should be going to.
So I have a couple of additions. Okay. So going to page 6, an item under committees A, 1, and 2, and it talks about the administrative team may form committees to bring recommendations to asset. I'd like to instead have it say both asset and funders for you to take back there. We learned this year in a couple of situations that funders were not consulted prior to instructions being given to particular agencies. And considering that affects the funds, in one case it was one agency wanted it one way, and there was no indication the Board of Supervisors ever intended their funds to be limited that way. So that way, if the recommendations are both to asset, meaning the volunteer board, and the funders at the same time, funders have a chance to weigh in while it's still applicable, not months after agency receives some notice. Okay? And so that's both in 1 and 2 under where it just says asset. Okay, then down to duties and responsibilities of asset A. Down there it sees priorities received from the funders. I believe it's appropriate to say each funder because we are individuals and have individual, well, we might agree with the broad scope of a goal. We each are individual in some of what our requirements are, and I'm going to come right back to that example again. One agency had a requirement, and all of a sudden the other four got it assigned to them, just lumped. So it is the fund from each funder, I believe, is appropriate and is actually the intent of the asset agreement. If you change this to the funders, that puts it collective and all of a sudden implies that there's kind of a grouping there that would not be. So I think that's changing the intent of the asset contract. I go back to where it was before. From each funder is how it originally was stated, correct? And the suggestion here in the cleanup is say the thunder, but you can read that very differently. And knowing that we had one funder who tried or did really, you know, got the asset, the team and asset volunteers to send a letter to someone saying, you know, this is the volunteer center. That was the situation. United Way was the major funder. So United Way said the money had to go to United Way, you know, the services had to do so much percentage, United Way agencies. The Board of Supervisors never intended that. Never. So this is a significant edit change. Okay. Then moving down to F, I'd just like to issue a reminder to my two colleagues as asset moves forward, because this might be the last time I deal with asset, okay? Is that F says the asset admin team shall ensure the forms are complete and make recommendation to the volunteers. We're on number 7. I'm sorry. Agency participation.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No,
yes.
She went down.
To page 7.
Page 7,
agency participation. Number F, it says the asset administrative team shall ensure that the forms are complete and make recommendations to the volunteer. I understand that this is the language in there now. I have expressed my concern about where asset is heading. I've expressed that several times at this board, and so I pass on to the two of you one more time. The asset admin team is not and should not be a decision-making authority, and to make recommendations to the volunteers means that the asset admin team has come to some agreement, some quasi decision making, and then recommending to the volunteers. I believe that they should be seeing that forms are complete and they should be providing information. But I think that you as funders going forward need to be very careful about watching what the asset admin team is doing, and are they in fact moving, broadening their authority too much. That's not a change, it is a comment to those who come after me.
And I just want to make a comment about that. This specifically goes into practice on a regular basis. I mean, as the admin team works side by side, I need volunteers at these different meetings and so forth, and if we can't make recommendations to volunteers, we are not going to be able to do that. I mean, we're right there. That's their connection to the kind of the asset admin team is made up of volunteers and funder staff, so we have to share that information with them. You're talking about
recommendation or option?
That's right.
I think it's the asset admin team, which is very definitely run by the paid people, by somebody that represents us and somebody that represents city and somebody that represents United Way. You're to provide options is fine. Recommendations, I think I've seen it in the last 2 years. It expanded and expanded, and we dealt with two situations here at the board this year. The YSF situation, which should have been options provided, not recommendations. The volunteer center, bringing in them. There was a presentation by another group wanting to offer a different software volunteer. And what I understood is that there was pushing by at least one of the admin team for the other option. And that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. You offering options to the volunteers? Absolutely. Because for you to take them for options, but recommendations, I'm just pointing out, okay, that's not the role. It shouldn't be.
Sandra? Well, I'm understanding Lauren's thing. She's making a comment to the two of us, not making any recommendation on any change.
And directions you would give to your staff.
So we can take her comment under advisement
right.
on that, and we can discuss.
Right.
Do you have any other recommended changes?
I don't have any other recommended
changes. Supervisor Hedden?
I do not.
I have a question. Has this gone in front of any of the other funders yet? Has it already been, is it in the process of being?
I believe it has gone to some of the other funders.
Okay.
It has at least heard a few of things around the same time frame, but I know that it has gone in front of the board. So it would have to double back through asset acquisition, then asset would need to approve the changes, and then it would go to inventory.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the point I'm making, is that we're in a process that if the changes were to be considered, it might have been better earlier, but...
Yeah, exactly.
So we have the option, several options. One would be a motion to approve as presented. The other would be a motion to approve with recommending the changes that Supervisor Olson has itemized, and there would be other options. But those are the two that I would say would probably be more likely. So, but whatever, I would enter. If, unless there's further discussion.
I guess my only other question, I'm looking back at page 6 to question to Supervisor Olson, just to make sure I'm clear. Your recommendation or your suggestion is for like 1 and 2, I'm looking at 1, after the administrative team may form committees to identify issues, perform studies, and bring recommendations to asset
and the funders.
So
at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
What is asset if it doesn't include the funders?
Yeah, that's what just my question. I'm just
sorry. I didn't hear all of your
questions.
What is asset if it doesn't include the funders? I read asset as including
because funders. We have someone from the county on asset. That's
those are volunteers, you mean?
No, we have our admin.
She's admin. No, that's staff. And that's my point I'm trying to make. Staff in the asset scenario has become more and more the decision makers, and what has the de facto decision makers, the gatekeepers. They're no longer funneling information to our asset, I feel, in some situations, to the asset volunteers, to allow the asset volunteers to make the recommendations that then come to the funders. Instead, they become the gatekeepers. They become the...
Is it possible? I mean, asset requires a lot of work of the volunteers. I remember when we were interviewing people to be asset volunteers,
mm-hmm.
I looked at that and I thought, wow, we're asking them to do quite a bit of work. I don't know if you're saying every time something comes up, you want the volunteers for that.
Well, that's what when I read any time that says asset with all capital letters, per the definition that goes up to the top, go back to page 1 or, you know, that is asset. The our volunteers appointed that are asset, not the admin team.
I'm pointing out that this doesn't say, it doesn't require anything. It doesn't say shall, it says may.
By agreement among sponsoring organization funders, a team shall be authorized by all sponsors to separate from any, but separate from any sponsor. The name of the process is analysis of social services evaluation team or asset.
Which word is it?
Way at
the top page.
Page 3, isn't it?
Yes.
Page 1. Yeah, page 1.
Assets and that's
That's where it's defined very clearly. The asset team is our volunteers. Admin team is there just for some administrative function.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, and while the chair, past chair, and I think the treasurer, who are volunteers, who are elected by our asset board, which are volunteers, once again, they sit on the asset admin team, but they're outnumbered by 1. Sometimes it's 3-3, given the fact that GSB doesn't always have a member for an admin person. And then when CICS was a member, it was 4-3 actual volunteers on even the asset admin team. So that's what I'm pointing out, okay? You know, that the line between where staff provides that background, provides contact, provides options, I believe, based upon some of what we've even had to deal with at this board table in the last year, means that role has become blurred. So that's why I would say asset and funders, because asset to me is back to them, volunteer board. do we need to approve it this week if we need to think about it more? Or?
I think the expectation was that it was going to be approved, but I assume it's still going to need to go through this process and approve it also. But as I mentioned, that if it's not approved here, then I'll take it back to the asset admin team for them to go back to the asset board, which wouldn't happen until next month to go through that process. Then it would have to come back here again.
So now I'm even thinking that I'm not sure if adding and funders does what you're asking, Morris.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of going to rereading through to see how.
I think you're talking about almost a process, and I think just adding and funders doesn't describe a process.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess here's my suggestion that we could approve this and ask the admin team to go back and talk more about the process that's behind that. It's Article 9, correct? Let me get back. Article 9 is duties and responsibilities, right? The I'm having trouble with the numbers because, okay, agency.
On page 6.
Ah, yes.
Funding process.
It starts with the committee.
Committee.
And I don't think adding in funders to that talks about the procedure. And I guess that's the thing. It's like, I think what Loris is suggesting is if things come up and there are changes, what's the process to change the things that have already gone through the asset process with volunteers making decisions. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Maybe give that more thought. You know, if it's an agency, do you want to call back volunteers? Because it did come to us.
But after the fact, the first thing we heard about the Volunteer Center letter was after it was a done deal and had been delivered to the Volunteer Center. All right? I mean, the Volunteer Center got some note about they had to meet a quota of so many asset agencies. Now, I understand that United Way was the large funder there, but it was a done deal for us, or actually it was a bit of the previous board, to wade in to say, but we don't want our money under that same requirement. That's what I'm talking about, is decisions are being made that should be made by the funders or the funders in discussion with their asset volunteers. Instead, the admin team is having those discussions. The admin team made that call. We were told about the YSS thing as they were looking for it. Okay, so that was a positive on that. I think one of the reasons we were told is because we were the only funder for that particular funding issue. Okay, that's what I think. So if you want to say it's a process, yes, I just think what was done to the Volunteer Center was not fair to them, fair to the supervisor. And
we do understand, though, that if any funder, including the board, wanted to increase the Volunteer Center's allocation, they certainly could do that.
Separately from, which is what we discussed and tried to do, and then because of the drawdown situation, the discussion, we had that, and we did. Okay, we did. Obviously, you know, at that point I lost on it. But one of the things I'm going to do before I go is I'm going to go back to some of the, couple of asset agency directors who have complained to me about how the asset process seems to be going. And I'm going to direct them to talk to Supervisor Hens and Supervisor Martin and anybody else. But there's some concerns out there about from some of the agency directors. Okay, I'm not telling you that. My job is to fight here. I also believe that I've covered assets for 20 years or watched it politically, okay? And I know everybody changes, but I think that it needs to be made very clear about where the line is drawn between the asset team.
I think that that issue is going to be addressed. I don't think a couple changes right now in the contract that when you, because they would mean something to you.
Yeah.
And you would know what you meant by them, but I'm not sure that they would mean what you would want people to get out of it. So I'm going to suggest that maybe we approve the contract as is, but you do just what you're talking about if you think there's people that have concerns and, you know, that they need to bring them up. But
I know when I asked about, sorry, Lynn, I don't want to respond and then I'll.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I know that when I brought up about where did the asset team have the authority related to some of the instructions to YSS, I was referred back to these specifically. That's why I think each funder is very clear from a legal standpoint, each funder as opposed to the funders. That's part of why I'm fighting and taking everybody's time this morning. Is I got referred right back to these things, and I didn't read them the same way that the person who referred me back to one of the admin team was doing, not from this agent, not representing us, but from a different entity. That's exactly where I got pointed back to.
So, two comments. The comment of the or each, probably semantics, I read it a little differently than you do, mm-hmm. but I don't have a problem personally if it's changed or recommended to each. I read them the same, but if that seems clearer, I don't have an issue there. I think from what I'm hearing from you, if I'm hearing correctly, sounds like what you're wanting is or suggesting that when the asset team, when they make their recommendations, you know, like after their hearing, no, when they okay. make their recommendations, it sounds like it's you'd like that information to come back to the funders before the agencies. Find out.
No.
Am I clear on that?
No.
No. Okay.
So thank
okay.
you. I'm not being clear enough. That's why I'm saying options. Options occur during the decision-making process when the volunteers haven't assigned the dollar amounts yet or percentages. Recommendations, by that point, it's too late. I mean, it is coming back to us within a day or so of whenever. In fact, you know, whether Sanders can email them to us at the same time. In past years, it has been. We've gotten an email the same time that, you know, it went out to the volunteers. I'm talking about the actual options when the discussions are being made about admin team says, I believe that this agency is doing this and maybe needs to change or whatever, or I believe that we need to do options here for this. That's when it needs to come back.
And I'm just not sure, Supervisor Olson, that this particular example that you raised happened the way you think it did, because I was at the meeting where the decision was made to decrease volunteer center funding, and if I remember correctly, that was brought by a volunteer. With no additional information from us, we all saw the same software.
I'm not challenging that. I'm challenging way back when Volunteer Center got the letter in 2019 or late 2018. That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm saying the last couple of years. It was a letter, and the letter came from the admin team. And it was an admin team decision, and I don't think the admin team was ever granted that type of authority, ever. That's what I'm talking about. Okay, so that's, you know, the process or whatever. So whatever, I appreciate you when Elise is saying you don't read it the same way. Because it really is like us conveying to our representative on the admin team is you don't have that authority from us.
Well,
and it's the city telling that person, and it's United Way telling that person. We aren't giving you that authority.
Well, then I think it needs to be, and I don't think, I'd rather not, excuse me, just a second. I'm looking for where the admin team is first mentioned in the.
And it might not be here, because there's a thicker reference manual that twice as big as this that does not come to the funders for approval.
Right.
It could be in there, which is a specific language.
Let me look at page 5.
said.
Yes, and I got referred to that too, and I said, where did this come from? I'm sure some board approved it way, way ago. So,
admin team operations would be where if you, if something, five, and moving on to the top of six. The admin team will do, may do this. All members of the admin team shall be voting members. Shall members, shall
admin are non-voting members, correct?
On admin team business.
Okay, so she's in a different place because I was going to say, yeah.
No, I just stopped. I'm just reading to myself.
Oh, thank you.
Halfway through a sentence. I guess it, what if you're wanting to restrict what the admin team can do, which is what I'm really hearing.
Correct.
I think it needs to go in that section, but
yes,
I don't think we should write it today.
I think perhaps
my sense is to keep things going. Maybe what we could do is approve this with the message that we think there needs to be more clarity about admin team authority, but not try to write it here, because if we try to write it here, I think what's going to happen then is maybe another funder will try to rewrite it in their contract,
mm-hmm.
and then another funder will try to rewrite it in their contract, and we'll be going around forever. I think it should be referred back to the admin team, maybe with some discussion, and see if they could come up with a proposed addition there about admin. And maybe it's in the manual and we don't know it.
I think
so. I'd like them to look at it.
I hear what you're saying. The only difference here is I'm going to vote no. Okay, so I'm not going to make a motion on this today. But I agree with you. This is not the place to rewrite it. It should come to us. Maybe I said last thing I'll do with asset, but do we have a meeting in July again? Okay, so that's what I feel has to happen, quite frankly, is that, you know, asset is looking at also about what are the funding priorities, you know, how is it going to be kind of reined in anyway. And I believe an honest discussion, I feel an honest discussion is that we talk about the admin team, about that. Then the whole, all the funders in one meeting can decide if they want to move forward or whatever.
And that does happen twice a year.
So twice a year. So I'm thinking
think
a lot. Okay. But I'd like that on the agenda. Okay. So,
is there any further discussion? If not, I'd entertain a motion.
I move that we approve the asset policies and procedures as presented.
I'll let you second it.
I will second the motion. Second by Merkin. Further discussion? If not, Hedden?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Olson?
Nay.
Okay, motion's approved.
Thank you.
Next, we'll go to discussion and consideration of Resolution 20-104, Wilson Stagg. Agricultural Division.
Isn't there another?
Okay, yeah. I put my notes on the wrong place. Pardon me. Mm-hmm. Stan Dam, Planning and Development. Supervisor Olson, you have a discussion consideration of Resolution 20-103, face coverings.
Correct. So we discussed this last week,
yes.
Assistant County Attorney Ethan Anderson was here. We agreed upon changes that we thought we would like to see in it.
Mm-hmm.
Afterwards, when I sent that draft to Ethan Anderson, he had me add one more whereas. Oh, sorry, it's a therefore.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a therefore acknowledging that people obviously don't have to wear a mask. They're exempt whether eating and drinking. So of a practical application practice, and otherwise everything is exactly as we discussed.
Okay. Thank you for all your work on this.
Sure.
Thank you to Ethan Anderson. Is there any discussion?
I'll move.
If we also move the adoption of Resolution 20-103. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Hedden. Okay. Olson?
Aye.
Cousin?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Adopt? Thank you. And pardon me, it always happens when I turn the page and I put notes on it, I put them on the next item and I think we're done with it.
Okay.
Now we'll go to discussion and consideration of Resolution 20-104, Wilson Stagg Agricultural Subdivision. Marcus Amon, are you with us?
This is actually Amelia. I'll be presenting for Marcus this morning. Hello. Good morning.
Okay.
Just really briefly, we did receive one inquiry on this subdivision, and it wasn't a comment opposed or for. It was just some general questions. And I think summarizing that neighbor's questions is a really good way of summarizing this subdivision. So they asked, are these lots buildable? No, this is an agricultural subdivision. The purpose is just to divide the ag land from some timber area and sell the timber to the property owner to the north. The property owner to the north already has access through an existing drive out to 560th Avenue. And they will, you know, continue to use that drive to access the property. There's no changes being made. It's simply to sell the property to the owner to the north so that they're the owner of the timber, and then the ag land will continue to be farmed by the tenant farmer. So if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer those. I know there was a PowerPoint that Marcus provided as well, and I'm happy to go through that.
Or do you have any questions? Do you want Amelia to go through the PowerPoint, or have you had... are we okay?
I have no questions.
I have no questions.
Okay. Thank you for the, Tom Marcus, thank you for the PowerPoint. Got some good info in that. Would entertain a motion on Resolution 20-104.
So moved.
Second.
Hedden?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Approved. Thank you, Amelia.
Thank you.
Next, we have discussion and consideration of Workforce Innovations and Opportunities Act, Iowa Region 11, 28E Agreement. Laura Solson.
Okay. This is the Workforce Innovations and Opportunity Act. I've been updating you as this process has gone forward. The quick review is that the federal government felt that Iowa was not in compliance with how it should be set up and how the funding streams should be separated from the service providers. Thus, we began a long process. That process is now at the end, and we are ready to do a new 2080. Our counties remain the same as Region 11 as before. I said I'd bring you a map of the new regions. I can't find that map on my computer right now, so I'll have to get one and email to you later. But we've got a shared liability agreement that talks about how we would absorb responsibilities, name a CLEO, a chief lead elected official, how any kind of repayments, should it be needed to the government, would be, how we would appoint business people to the actual decision-making board. There's a separate board that looks at who we would have contracts to provide services with. So that's a shared liability agreement, and then the shared liability agreement acronyms and definitions are there also, but you're approving the agreement. And then underneath it, in item number 7 right below, is the actual resolution 2011 for the workforce development to agree to work together. So the auditor's office kindly caught that and split it out for us. I'll be happy to answer any specific questions you have.
Somebody just put us on. Well, can you hear anybody? We have nobody else in there. Okay.
Joe Quaker.
Oh,
yeah. Joe Quaker, are you there?
Joe is still on the phone. Well, I'm going to have to. Okay.
I just have one question.
Mm-hmm.
Was this something, and I don't know that it was necessarily needed with all the people, but was Ethan able to look through
that? I sent it to Ethan when I got it back in May,
okay.
And then that's when I think we've been inundating him. But Ethan, I have had Ethan involved in this the very beginning.
Okay.
In fact, Ethan worked on the first draft, okay? And then when they went instead to have Polk County be the lead county, thank goodness, got us off the monetary hook, and Polk County was agreeing they will go ahead and be the fiscal agent.
They will. That was
yeah. Okay. Yeah, that was the issue.
Okay.
Yeah, they're going to put in for it. So anyway, so that's
yeah.
So Ethan, yeah, and I know Ethan has been being kind, okay? But Ethan, then I reminded him again.
Okay. That was just viewed by
yeah.
my one
yeah,
question.
Absolutely.
Now. Thank you.
Yeah.
So the fiscal agent being Polk County.
We haven't voted them in officially, but they're the ones who agree
so
with
the county. So the county serving as fiscal agent agrees to assume primary liability for any disallowed costs.
Correct. Primary.
Well, that's why, because whenever you're looking at something that's called a shared liability agreement, that
yes.
was my question, is what liabilities are we assuming by this? And it looks like the county that serves as fiscal agent is saying they're going to be liable for.
Yeah.
So what are our liabilities as another member?
Our liabilities in practicality will be if the program, a whole program itself is found to have not been administered or delivered correctly by our subcontractor, because we're not delivering any programming. Instead, the region is, and we're contracting with, say, like Children and Family Services out of Des Moines for, you know, youth, okay? If something there and would be that we would have to share, and the discussion was related to how many of our residents received assistance in the program. That's where the discussion originally had gone, okay? So we're not off the hook in the event that they would come for the entire money, the entire pot of money. But this is how they worked out to make it agreeable to everybody given the CTEC situation. If you recall, I was asking the legal department to go find the CTEC documents that they put in or whatever. And so Polk County agreed to step up. The amount of money, just so if there's anybody with interest in Polk County there, okay, we're talking about for our entire region maybe $1 million. That was this is funding that's very, very targeted.
Annually?
Yes, about annually. And that'll be spread among 7 counties. And there will be a new provider for some of it, because DMAC is elected to get out of providing the services that were tied to the Ticket to Work program, which is separate.
Mm-hmm.
But they tied the two of them together to really kind of maximize and boost the funding available for, like, dislocated workers.
How many providers have there been previously in a given time? Just a handful?
2 to 3, just a handful.
Just 2 to 3 providers usually. So it's not a huge thing in terms of, will the fiscal agent then be responsible to determine if the providers are following their contract?
Yes.
So the fiscal agent is really taking on that.
Correct. And the Central Iowa, the board of various entities like business people, there needs to be someone from state agency that Iowa will recap, et cetera, whatever. There needs to be somebody from higher ed. There needs to be somebody from K-12 or whatever. This whole board of people, they also get approve those contracts. They get the finances, and so do the board that we are on.
Mm-hmm.
The chief elected officials, we get all the finances also. And
so there's a lot of people involved. And
there are a lot of people involved.
That's what I was asking about, the employee's responsibility.
Yes.
There's an old saying. So when everybody's responsible, nobody's responsible?
Correct. But in this particular case,
and the fiscal agent is really where the buck stops.
Where the buck stops.
That's what I'm trying
right.
to understand.
Correct.
Okay.
That makes me feel better.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'll make the motion that we approve the Workforce Innovations and Opportunity Act Region 1128E agreement for Title I federal funding of programs to assist disadvantaged youth and displaced and disadvantaged adult workers.
And I will second that with the addition of just saying shared liability agreement. Sorry.
Nope.
I forgot to put that in the motion.
Okay. There's been a motion and a second. Further discussion? If not, Kevin?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin, aye. Motion carries. And then the resolution is a separate document that's necessary for that.
And I'll move Resolution 20-11 for the Workforce Development Interactive Agreement.
Second.
Okay, motion and second on Resolution 20-111. Olson?
Aye.
Hedden?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Resolution approved. Now we have Leanne Harder for discussion and consideration of extending deadlines and waiving requirements in the economic development process and policy. Leanne, are you on the phone?
I am.
Okay, I don't know why we're getting... I'm going to turn it up a little bit, but we have... Somebody's put their phone on hold, and we're getting hold music, and I can't get rid of it. So you're going to have to talk over it. I apologize.
Okay, that sounds good. It's probably more difficult for me to hear you all than you to hear me, maybe.
Okay, I can hear you. We're okay, and we'll speak loudly.
Okay. So the item that is on the board's agenda is consideration of a couple of exceptions, if you will, to our economic development process and policy. The pre-application conference that is indicated as being mandatory in the economic development policies was held last Thursday via Zoom. Since then, I have heard from a couple other entities that were not able to attend whether or not the board would consider waiving the requirement that meeting be mandatory. I did record the Zoom meeting, and I'm still figuring out how to access that and upload it, but that is available for potential participants to watch, or I could host another Zoom meeting if the board would consider waiving that. That's the first question for the board. Then the second question that was raised at the meeting was whether the board would consider extending the deadline. As you all know, we've revised these deadlines a couple times because of the pandemic and the situation in which we find ourselves. The turnaround time for applications is Monday, July 13th, to me. The comment was made that that's a pretty quick turnaround time. So again, the question was raised whether the board would consider extending that. I put in the memo that if we follow the existing process, the dates and the deadlines that would be applicable. I do think there is somewhat of a buffer during the month of July to extend that application deadline. Maybe 2 weeks, but if we go much past August, it gets really problematic to be able to certify debt by December 1st to the county auditor and actually work through the entire process. With that, I'll be glad to answer any questions the board has of me.
So you're recommending moving everything 2 weeks? So the application would be July 27th instead of July 13th, and then with everything else in.
If the board would want to do that, I am comfortable with that being a deadline. I don't have to shout anymore.
Hey.
Being a revised deadline.
Good.
I will note I am scheduled to be out of the office that day, but I will make sure that and that does cause some procedural issues, but I will either change my plans or make sure that directions are left accordingly.
Well, are you going to be out for an extended period of time or just that day?
I was planning on being out that for an extended period of time, but I can modify my plans if necessary.
So what's your pleasure, board?
I have a question about between September 8th and October 6th. Why is that such a long period of time? Why can't we? Go ahead.
We leave it in to have a buffer for one in case we would have a limited agenda or any issues that board meetings would be canceled or rescheduled. Also, if we have to do any legal notices. We've had, it's been kind of a learning curve over the years that sometimes we've had a legal notice that did not get published for some reason, or we've had a limited agenda. It's just that added buffer to make sure that we can get all the applicant, get all the T's crossed and I's dotted through this process as well.
Supervisor Hedden, did you have any questions?
Okay, so I'm just looking at, sorry, I had to go back and forth on the date, so just that I'm looking at. So you're looking at, and I guess there's two questions, whether you waive the meeting attendance. So I guess that would be my first question, is that, could you give a little bit of a reason why they want the meeting waived?
Or why they couldn't attend.
Yeah, either why they couldn't attend, but even if it's a Zoom meeting, I guess that's what I'm just trying to figure that out. If you could clarify that one first.
The comments I received was they had wires crossed, and they were, so I don't know if one individual had indicated that they would attend on behalf of the organization, and it didn't. I don't know what happened in that. And another individual indicated that it was not made clear that it was a mandatory meeting.
Are there materials available that cover everything that was said and done during the meeting?
Yes, and I did record the Zoom meeting.
The past policy of the board and why it was mandatory, okay, is because they didn't impart too much staff to have to deal with all of this. Well, I didn't know this, or I didn't know that.
Okay. So it'd be kind of like a bidder's conference.
Yes, exactly like a bidder's conference. And we don't tell people after the fact on a bidder's conference. So the wires crossed type of situation, or the other person not attending, that if the money is really that important to them, this is my feeling. And the fact that this is not a new program, that we've done this for several years, and always have required the people to be there. It's always been mandatory. So I'm a no on that one.
So that's a question then. You treat it as a bidders conference, and that's people's opportunity to ask questions so everybody hears the same answer. Mm-hmm. So you don't normally answer questions that people get with you with afterwards, correct? Or if you do, do you make sure that everybody who attended the bidders conference gets the answer to the question?
I normally don't get questions. If they're there, they normally don't follow up with other questions. But what I would have done, had I gotten questions, I would have emailed all the participants.
Okay.
Or responded back so everyone got the same thing. It's just like we do with our questions and answers for requests for proposals.
And if you went to the trouble to report it on Zoom, it's available. So how will you know that they attend, that they watch
it?
That's, I don't know. I don't know if I know. That's a good question. I was just going to say I could put on YouTube and mark it private and. I don't know. I'd have to look at that.
Be able to help you. Maybe IT can help you with that.
My other concern is that I see who wasn't there. I mean, I just figured out, at least when it came to the cities themselves, the ones who weren't there, who have attended in the past. And I'm concerned that we've had problems with one city in the past with not understanding or trying the rules or trying to push the rules or whatever. And I'm concerned that that's what's happening in this situation, too. I mean, I don't know, and I don't necessarily want to know the cities that weren't there. I just know the cities that weren't there. And so I'm just inclined to say no. This is the rule, and this is what everybody else had to follow. I mean, the AEDC had three different employees there, representing, I think, different entities. I just think sometimes there's some bottom lines here that have to be done.
So are you saying not even offer them the opportunity to view the Zoom recording?
Correct. I mean, it was the bidders conference, if you will. Okay. This is it. It's been mandatory every year. And the entities, I will ask we have, were any of them a single entity, I mean, one person entity, as in there weren't other people who could have attended? County or city employees, city council members, mayor, if the clerk wasn't available, or the mayor, or, you know, from the school district or whatever, were any of these inquiries from somebody who literally represents a one-person entity?
No.
Okay.
So first option would be whether we want to allow people to do a makeup session, so to speak, on Zoom, or whether we want to say you were notified, you didn't make it, sorry, or just waive the pre-application conference totally. And the other one is, do we move our timelines, consider moving the timeline, everything back 2 weeks?
So we punish, okay, I for a no, and part of it also is because all of these other entities made the effort to get somebody there on that time.
Yeah, I guess I look at that they would have all been notified of the conference,
mm-hmm.
Whether wires crossed or whatever, I just look at the number of people who did attend. I guess I would have more of a concern if I saw the majority of people who were not able to attend, thinking, okay, there were some other issues going on. But it was an announced, and it was a Zoom conference. So that's why I asked the question in regards to that. So I would have a concern with waiving that meeting attendance. Regarding the extended application deadline, that's where I was kind of looking through, of saying, okay, if you extend it out 2 weeks, then you'd be looking at the applications to be due July 27th, the supervisor knowledge receipt on, well, looks like August 4th, and then consultation meeting notes sent would be August 17th, and then with the presentation to the Board of Supervisors September 15th. I just want to make sure, is that what you're looking at, Leanne?
I don't know that the September dates, I don't know that we will have to modify.
Okay.
That might require some changes to the policy. I think we're safe with those dates. And again, we keep that, and I should have expanded on this. We keep that September buffer in there. If there are, so the applicants come and they present at a board meeting, and if we have a large number of applications, we try to stagger them at several different board meetings if possible.
Why don't we just do this? Why don't we just move the July 13th date for applications due to July 27th? Because I think that's what the applicants are most concerned about.
Right.
And
right.
Then just ask Leanne to make adjustments from there on.
Yeah, that would work.
So we don't have to redo the whole thing, but that's the important date, is when the applications are due, correct?
Right.
Okay.
And I guess I have just one other question. What was their concern? I know you said it was a short turnaround to meet it. Is it because you had this meeting later than normal?
Yeah.
For 3 weeks.
Yeah, I think that's, and then the expectation that they would be able to get a project application together and back by the 13th.
So, Leanne, I seem to remember the discussion when I asked Mark Jackson from Story City about that. He said because of COVID, they were having difficulty getting with architects. And then Sonia from Gilbert, she pointed out, she had a question related to that about how exact do the estimates have to be, because once again, they're having difficulty getting with the people so that they normally could provide the down to the penny figure. And so I think those were two of the issues, too.
So are there any other questions of Leanne?
No.
If not, I'd entertain a motion, and to maybe to include both issues, as well as the pre-application conference, we're going to continue that requirement, and then changing the application date.
My turn.
Yep.
Okay, then I would make the motion that we do not waive the meeting attendance requirement and that we extend the application date to July 27th. For the economic development process and policies.
I second.
Any further discussion? If not, Hedden?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Adopted. Anything else, Leanne?
No, thank you. I will follow up with all those that attended about the extension of the application. And then with those individuals that did reach out to me, I will let them know that the meeting attendance requirement has not been waived. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Now we'll go on to discussion and consideration of hiring freeze exceptions for IRVM Vegetation Management Aid, Joe Quaker and Alyssa Wignall. Joe, are you on the phone?
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
I kind of miss it. I kind of miss the music board. Good morning. Well, I hung up and dialed back in to make sure it wasn't me because I would think that you'd probably all assume it would be me since I'm so computer savvy.
We didn't know who else might be on the phone, but we didn't say anything. We didn't point you out.
Thank you. So, yeah, hiring freeze exemption request. I haven't talked to Alyssa about this. Mike and I briefly chatted. So, you know, the IRVM team is down to three. It's Tyler, myself, and Allison. You know, I don't think we're crazily overstaffed as it was in the beginning. We did have a great seasonal employee hired right at the end of May. That person got a full-time job, which is great for anybody getting out of college, and it's kind of left us short-handed. And with that, you know, this proposed position, it's budgeted for. It would go through the rest of this weed season and brush and seeding with the hydro seeder. Other tasks would be the seed harvest coming up in September, and this person also would be around to help with the most popular brush and logging operations that we do in the drainage districts November, December, January. So I'm just kind of looking to fill out our two crews of two. It's tough not to have two people at a time work, you know, doing much of anything, unless it's administrative duties, even, you know, hooking up equipment and things like that and lifting things. It's nice to have a wing person. The one thing about having a small crew, we do have enough vehicles through this COVID deal where we can pretty much have our personal space and our own pickup to drive. So I feel comfortable about that. You know, as things may or may not be getting better or worse, but I thought I'd throw that out there. That's pretty much my spiel. Are there any questions?
Joe, I have a question. Not sure if it's you or for Alyssa. Just based on your comment, so you mentioned somebody who had left and got a full-time position or whatever. So is this replacing that position?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
And you said it goes through January?
Yes, if I can find that person.
Okay. Oh, so it's just a seasonal position until January, is what you're...
Correct. Sometimes they go until February, but we have enough money budgeted, you know, to work through, depending on how many hours they work. It's you know, sometimes they don't work full 40 hours, but at least through Christmas, December, early January, depending on weather, yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
Any other questions?
I have none. Just a comment about how what a good job Joe continues to do and his whole team in getting out there in the month, which is now, to take care of our roadside and take care of some of these drainage issues, et cetera. So I would hate to have him handicap his team by not having that fourth person. especially since it's seasonal.
Well, thank you.
So I would make a motion that we approve the hiring freeze exemption for the vegetation management position, seasonal.
Second.
Okay. Further discussion? If none, Olson?
Aye.
Seddon?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Thank you. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you, guys. Nice to hear your voices.
Yeah, bye.
Good to hear you. Have a good day.
All right. Cheers. I'm headed out. Bye-bye.
Okay. So next, we have department reports. We have none. Other reports, we have none. Upcoming agenda items, anything anybody wants to mention?
I guess the only thing that I would mention is that the Board of Health has been working on some guidelines addressing COVID-19 to continue to encourage residents to, take all the precautions to help mitigate COVID-19. They had a meeting last night. They will be having another meeting on Thursday. I don't know what the discussion will be exactly, or if they may be making any recommendations to come to the board. So there may be, but I don't know what their final discussions may be, because they have received some additional information after their meeting last night. So I don't know if that will change any direction or not.
And will they use the larger conference call number? So they.
Yes, they will be using the larger conference call number.
Good. Supervisor Olson, do you have anything?
No.
Okay. Then, public forum number two, comments from the public, items not on the agenda. The board may not take any action due to requirements of the open meetings law, but may do so in the future. I will open the public forum.
Nothing in text.
Okay. Anybody on the phone? Hearing nobody, I'll close public forum number two. We will go on to liaison assignments, committee meeting updates, and announcements from the supervisors. Supervisor Olson, do you want to start?
I think the one thing I wanted to kind of give you a heads up on is that the HRDA director and the assistant director, scheduler, Brooke Ramsey, they will be contacting or may have already contacted Sandra about getting on the agenda. Okay, I'll follow up with them. They have gone ahead and contacted City of Ames and asked to be on the agenda. And I will be going with them to that meeting, and I believe Barb O'Neill, who is the CIRAG director, will be there also. But then they need to come and talk to us. As the staff works on a redesign to make the delivery of HRDA services as robust as possible, but also sustainable for once the COVID dollars run out, it is clear that we need to continue to clean up some past practices. I've referenced in the past about that seemed like we were providing some kind of taxi service when we shouldn't have been, okay? The other issue is I briefly told you in the past that there was some question about some money set for urban transit and some money set for rural transit, both going to CIRAG, but and then we heard it weren't getting all of that dollars. That's now been settled about who gets what. That was a 5307 and 5311. So we need to have a conversation with the City of Ames about now that that's settled, that it's going to be that HRDA can't provide so many trips in the City of Ames that we're providing right now, especially for people who don't really qualify for like the Dial-A-Ride, et cetera. And some of those people should be riding the bus instead. And so some of the money that we could have been using for more trips out here or better scheduling of trips out of Ames has gone to those funds. So Ames needs to first really be told about it, needs to have a discussion about how do they want to go ahead and fund that, because if we're getting $40,000 a year, HRDA is getting from CIRAG. That dollar amount, if they don't raise that, but HRDA stops kind of drawing down on City of Ames funds, turns out the City of Ames funds that they're drawing down will only really suit the rides for 2 months. So what HERTA has done, they provide about 1,100 rides in the city of Ames every month, and they've only been billing 250 of them under the asset contract. Okay? On our side of it, they're not going to be able to draw down all the asset funds, but they need them released as it's designed now, asset funding. So they're going to be coming to us, present some options. Okay, can we maybe just get some of that asset money freed up in general to provide those other? Can we change how we draw down, you know, what the qualifications are? But so this COVID, oddly enough, has given them an opportunity to stop and take a breath. And at the same time, have the 5311, 5307 controversy. It's not just that DART has the same problem with Waukee and their limited areas. I mean, this was a... several agencies kind of having the funds go the wrong place. But anyway, so decisions have to be made. And so that will be coming to us also, but they have already, I got a copy of the memo reaching out to go on the city council agenda, because they're the ones who may be directly faced with having to look at money, because the cost to provide Dial-A-Ride per service will increase. Because some of these people are, they're being kind of, the cost is spread out wider. So be ready to listen to some numbers, be ready to listen to some options about it, but the goal is to try and make sure that the services are as robust, and be ready by the time this is all done to listen to some complaints from our Ames residents. We can't forget their Story County residents also. But we're going to need to take a look at that. And this may be another instance where maybe in the long run HERTA isn't under asset. That is, once again, can't meet given the very narrow social service definition of it.
This sounds like a fairly complicated agenda item, and particularly for supervisors who have not before
been
on HERTA board.
Yeah.
So I would just encourage that we have plenty of time set aside for that, have materials way in advance, and that we not have any other huge issues on that agenda, because it sounds like it's going to take a good share of time.
It is. So, Sandra, I'll get on that, maybe not today. We all know we're kind of booked up today, but to send an email that I'll copy to Brooke and Julia, copy you on it, and have them work with you on that. Okay, you know, anything you can think of, and I'm going to shoot them ideas too about what they need to remember to tell the supervisors as soon as possible. And as I said, they're working on the Ames one, which will be the more complicated decisions to make, I think. So that's it. Thank you.
I have, which we don't have on our schedule for tomorrow, the CCMT meeting. I have a CICS meeting on Thursday. Friday, I have a couple meetings. I have a community health collaborative with Mary Greeley meeting in the morning that is via Zoom. But I also have a CIJDC, the Central Iowa Juvenile Detention Center meeting. It's also that particular day that's at 10, so hopefully be able to attend both of those. I have inquired for the CIJDC meeting because they are doing that in person, and I am not sure what social distancing or other protocols they are putting in place, because the room that they hold is generally quite filled and very close quarters for seating. So I'm also checking in to see if there's a Zoom or a call-in option for that particular meeting.
I have a question for you. When you mentioned Mary Greeley, it kicked up in my mind. It's not Mary Greeley itself, but you had on your schedule something about an EMS advisory group meeting or something like that?
Yeah, so that's in July.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I'd have to look back at the person who reached out to me. It's more curriculum-based of what they're kind of looking at, just having other people kind of look at some of their curriculum, what are they kind of missing on that, and ask if I would partake in that review.
Okay, thank you.
So,
because just I know Keith Morgan had mentioned in his report, the written report, that they're looking at trying to start to talk to about coordinated EMS again. I mean, that's a very narrow, simple synopsis of his paragraph, okay? And so I was just trying to know if that was coordinated to that.
Yeah, I'll find the exact email so that I can give you more specific details on that, but that's what it what the focus is more.
And then, so Linda, were you through EMS as chair of EMS, EMA agency?
I'm chair of your Emergency Management Commission.
Commission. Okay. Thank you. Okay, commission. Sorry, got my initials wrong.
That's okay.
So are you guys thinking about looking again about some kind of coordinated EMS moving forward on that discussion? Have there been any?
I think right now, with the emergency management agency, they've been so busy with COVID-19. I need to get back with Keith about that because we have talked before about that. And EMS is a lot of things. People think ambulance right away, but it's a lot more than that. So, and there was some legislation that didn't go anywhere in this legislative.
Right. That's why I'm kind of asking.
No, that did not get passed. So I don't know where that leaves us.
Okay, thank you. Because I sent an email to ask our auditor just if this board were to declare it an essential service, given that the legislation didn't pass, what would be a time frame to put it in front of the public? And the earliest it could be put in front of the public was next March. But I just want to
think it should be. I really think it needs to be reviewed in terms of what is the DIS. Now, when I hear emergency management services as an essential function, well, what is the requirement of that? What does the code say about it? I think we would need to really, and I've thought of this before, you know, when we've had discussions about ambulance and looked at the legislation, that it really needs a good study at the local level to talk about, you know, to say what are we talking about that would be funded by, you know, you just don't say, let's just put this much money out there, whatever.
Right.
We need some,
right.
We need
right.
some kind of needs
right.
assessment that we don't really have
I
right
agree.
Now. And that's something I've always been interested in.
Okay.
And yeah, we had talked about ambulance and last year and maybe an update of an ambulance study that Rich Higgins had done.
Yes.
But I think it goes way beyond ambulance.
Thank you. Thanks for letting me bring it up. It just seemed like it was an opportune time given.
Yeah, it's really something to look at because we know, and honestly, Story County probably is better off than a lot of really rural counties where you don't even have countywide, you don't even have ambulance service available countywide or emergency management services, you know, that cover a county. So, but we always can do better on that. And a worthwhile thing to get back to. Anything else?
Nothing. Thank you.
Okay, I have a meeting this afternoon via Zoom on roundabouts, which I'm Zooming. I mentioned that at home this morning. Somebody said, oh, Zooming around the roundabout? And I don't know. But I'm very interested in that, so I'm going to be on that at 1. We have the hearing on the Maxwell North application at 6 p.m. tonight via Zoom. CCMT tomorrow. Several meetings to take the potential for Thursday evening. There's jurisdiction executives also. I think our sheriff is on the NAACP's Zoom meeting tonight regarding
Thursday night
regarding policing. And we do not have a special board meeting on Friday as far as I know. Does anybody have any things that would require a special meeting? Okay, we don't have one then. Good. Okay. I have nothing else. So I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Seddon.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Merkin. Aye. We're adjourned. Thank you.
Great.